Blog Talk Radio.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard to live it, but I'm afraid to die. I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Then I go to my brother. Say, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Lord, there have been times that I thought I could last for long. But I know a change gon' come. Oh, yes it will.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another segment of Let's Talk Footwork. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. A reminder, we do not own the rights to the music you just heard. Also, please click tag and share. Tell someone Let's Talk Footwork is on the air. And tonight, we're talking about the trial of Aaron Dean. And why has there been so many delays? Is this normal? And why has it been tolerated? That's what we're talking about tonight. But before we begin, a disclaimer, the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Let's Talk Footwork, Carrie Hines, or any future advertisers. With that said, let's talk Footwork. I see my guests are on the line. Good evening, Attorney Leon Reed. Good evening, Reggie Russell. How are you?
Good evening. I'm fine.
Good. Good evening, Reggie.
Yeah, good evening, Carrie.
Good evening. Listen, a lot's going on with this trial. And, you know, I know you know and understand more than most of us, Attorney Leon Reed. Can you explain to us why we're seeing so many delays in this trial, and is this normal?
Well, first of all, nothing was normal after COVID and during COVID. When COVID happened, of course, all of the courts across Texas basically shut down. And the governor issued an order that basically prohibited a lot of people who were accused of violent crimes from actually bonding out. So when things started to crank back up again, what ended up happening is you had people that have literally been in custody for over a year, some for over 2 years. I had a trial in November with someone who'd been in jail for over 3 years due to COVID. And the way that Tarrant County has run since I've been a practicing defense attorney is people, and it's actually codified in state law, but people who are actually in custody on older cases of a similar degree or nature, they have priority over people who are out on bond because they haven't been adjudicated. They could still be found not guilty. And so the people in custody who are having their freedom taken away from them typically get priority over people who are out on bond. And so when it comes to this trial in particular, I believe the first time that it came to a trial setting was November. In November, the defense team, that's when they made it known that they're going to be filing a motion for change of venue. They had a hearing on that in mid-December, and I believe it got reset to January. And at the hearing in January, they had a reset. At that point, the lead counsel, Jim Lane, had some medical issues and so forth. So you had the May setting, to where the May setting is the one that's of the most significance, because at the May setting is when I believe Judge Hagerman set the trial date for June, and you know, because he was saying, look, y'all are capable attorneys, y'all have been the ones making all of the appearances and stuff anyway. If he's not ready to go, we're going to go on that day. But it looks like there was an issue with when they filed their motion for clarification of the basically the pecking order on June the 3rd, they had a hearing, and that hearing wasn't necessarily public or didn't. The way it happened at that hearing, apparently they felt, and they being Aaron Dean's attorneys, that Judge Hagerman was rude and dismissive, and because he was trying to set his trial date ahead of some other trial dates that had already previously been scheduled before he scheduled Aaron Dean's trial date in May, these other two trials had already been set during that same week. And the thing is, when an attorney puts in a vacation letter, the court basically will acknowledge it. And as long as you do it within 45 days, well, apparently these letters were put out a year ago, but they also block off in the computer time periods from which the court coordinators know don't set someone during these time periods because a vacation letter is in. Well, a vacation letter wasn't in for those particular dates. The vacation letters were in for dates in early July. And so their position was, look, we have from you a list of 150 potential witnesses, and we anticipate that if we start this trial at the date you chose, you may run into our previously planned vacation days for whatever reason they put them in. Additionally, you're trying to bypass trials that were actually set before yours, and in doing so, you're trying to set your trial for a person who is out on bond ahead of people who are still in custody who have pleaded not guilty and want their day in court. and have been in jail for several hundred days. And so their position was, you need to move this. And in Judge Gallagher's hearing, I believe I forgot the date last week, but in his recent hearing, he basically acknowledged that, and he reset the court date. But at the same time, then the recusal came up. And so the recusal is actually being heard sooner than Judge Gallagher had initially indicated. He said it would be the week after next. However, Judge Evans was able to get it sooner than that, and so it's going to be on the 23rd on the recusal. I don't believe that the recusal is going to take place, but the most significant thing is that Judge Gallagher ordered that regardless of whether recused or not, if the judge remains Judge Hagerman, or if Judge Hagerman is recused and a new judge is assigned, that a scheduling order will be put in place, and basically that scheduling order will give a definitive trial date. I know that was the long version, but I did want to kind of be thorough enough to elicit any questions.
Okay. Let's start here. You're a black attorney in Tarrant County, same county. Is it likely that you could have asked for all these delays and been granted them?
Yes.
If I were
Mike High School, Leon Haley, Lisa Pamplin, you know, Glennis McGinty, all of us are capable attorneys, and had we done the same thing, or if you file a motion to recuse, it is going to be heard. If your trial partner gets sick and you file a motion for a continuance, it will likely get granted. The biggest thing that I found interesting is that when the attorneys for Aaron Dean filed their discovery, you have to understand who they are. One is a forensics guy who used to work for the Tarrant County District Attorney's Office, who was a prosecutor in the forensics area, and the other one is Judge Gill, who used to be one of the seated district court judges, I believe, in the 213th for an extended period of time before he ran for DA or was going to, ended up working at the DA's office. But Judge Gill and another attorney have been printing the Texas Criminal Defense or Texas Criminal Law Guideline for decades. So they actually have been printing a booklet, a manual, for other attorneys to use with motions and so forth, because that is the type of guy he is. He's a paper guy.
I hear you, Leon. But Reggie, do you believe that a black attorney could have asked for all of these delays and been granted them?
I don't think this is a matter about whether it's a black attorney or a white attorney. It's the matter of the case. This is police preference. This is why the police officers have their union. Police officers union is like criminal organization now. They shot call everything, and that's what's going on right now. Now, had Tatiana Jefferson had shot Aaron Dean, no. She'd already be convicted, already doing her time, and would have been and probably been sentenced to death. So that's what we're dealing with at this point. They're trying to figure out the best way to wangle and weasel out of this case, because they do not want to send Aaron Dean to prison.
That's what it feels like. Yeah. That's what it feels like to me. I don't know. You're a defense attorney. You know, Attorney Reed, and you say otherwise, but I don't feel like a black person could have gotten the same treatment. I don't think a black attorney could have even risked asking for this many delays.
The DA's office has stated in the past they are ready to go. And so when you say they don't want to send this person to jail, the DA's office is ready to go and ready to proceed with the murder trial. So the defense attorneys, and to an extent, he's absolutely correct, profile matters. If this was a low-profile matter that didn't have national attention, because anytime you have something that's of this stature, everybody's going to try to put their best foot forward. If there are going to be cameras in the courtroom, you aren't going to send some peon out there to mess something up and look bad on national television. They're going to get the best attorneys that they have, try to dot all the I's, cross all of the T's, and if anything, the amount of money, this is a good example of price tag justice. If they didn't have the resources to pay for all of the motions, all of the expert witnesses that they're lining up, all of the discovery and all of that that they're getting, if they didn't have the money to pay for all of that, then you're looking at a probably sooner or would have happened sooner. But the fact is, we are where we are. And their job is to prepare as best as they can for the trial. That trial will happen. And they're going to come out slugging, trying to defend the actions of Aaron Dean. That's what they're being paid to do, and that's what they're doing.
Okay, let's look at it like this then. Reggie Ruffin, would you agree this is the trial of the century for Tarrant County?
In some ways it is, because this, like I said, you know, the circumstances of how this whole thing happened is on the line now. And I think me and you, when we talked about the things that Joel Fitzgerald was saying, because you know how connected I am to that murder of Garrett Hull, that, mm-hmm. you know, they was looking at the fact that that Joel Fitzgerald basically blew a dog whistle to attack. And a lot of people had gotten shot and killed from the time that Garrett Hull died till then when Tatiana Jefferson was killed. Because the police just had this take no prisoners mentality. And then in that particular situation, the simplest thing would have been go to the front door, knock on the door. If the door was already open, you got your flashlight, you got your gun, say Fort Worth PD, and just say it loudly and could have went in there. That's what should have happened. But no, they wanted to try to paraphrase what happened with Botham John and say, well, we don't want to do that because you saw what happened to Amber Geiger. Amber Geiger was not no babe in the woods. She was not innocent. She knew damn well what she was doing, and she did it. So this situation has a little less culpability, but it has a lot of what it does have a lot of is unnecessary things that led to this tragedy that they're trying to back out of slowly. So this was a very poorly executed scenario.
But isn't it odd that they have, you know, the murder of Garrett Hull and the man that's standing trial for that versus what's going on with the Tatiana Jefferson and that trial with Aaron Dean at the same time that they're in the news? Do you think that's by coincidence? Or, because I don't believe in coincidences, are they trying to put Say what?
I said, no, not these days. You can't believe a coincidence because they're so bold with it. They'll just do it right in your face and dare you to say mm-hmm. something about it.
Mm-hmm. I just think that it's a distraction. I think the other trial is as important as it is. It was timely. It's very timely to try to distract from what's going on with Aaron Dean, that you got this bad person over here who's accused of murdering an officer, and so therefore you don't look over to the right and see Aaron Dean is accused of killing a Tatiana Jefferson.
Exactly. And that's the juggler. That's the PR juggling act they're doing. It's what are we going to do when these black people killed this cop, and then here we are, you know, black people killed a white cop, now we got white cop killing black person. But the difference is the black person that was killed wasn't a criminal. She was a woman living her life, living at home, having time with a nephew, and got killed behind some dumb shit.
I absolutely agree. Attorney Reed, let me ask you this. So why is the gag order in place, and why is it not being implemented right now? Why all of a sudden did we have a gag order, and then you hear about the recusal hearing coming up, and then all of a sudden people forget the gag order?
Well, the gag order typically will direct witnesses and so forth not to speak to the media about a trial. I'm not aware myself personally of either of the attorneys speaking directly to the media about what's taking place. So if one has, then Judge Hagerman, he can't even address that right now, because once a motion to recuse gets filed, it basically stops that judge from doing anything with that case until such time as the hearing is heard on the recusal. If the judge remains in place, then the judge can address any transgression against the previously set a gag order, but Judge Hagerman wouldn't even be able to do anything about it right now. On the tail end, he would, but I'm not aware that either of them have spoken directly to the media. Let me touch on something.
We know Lee Merritt was put under a gag order, and so was Councilman Chris Nettles. And remember, they tried to say that they wanted Lee Merritt held in contempt of court for breaking the gag order. And this week, I think yesterday, we saw Councilman Chris Nettles on the news talking about this trial.
I can't right now. Even if either of them had, Judge Hagerman can't do anything to address it until this matter is resolved as to whether or not he will remain the judge on this case. If they did violate any terms of the gag order, then if Judge Hagerman were to remain on the case, then he could deal with that, and he can impose sanctions.
Is it likely he will remain on the case?
I believe so. Judge Hagerman basically has been the ultimate question rides on impartiality, and the same thing that a judge asks jurors to do every day: can you be impartial and follow the law, whether you like the law or not? If the law is in front of you, can you follow it? And that's the same. That's the question that's asked in every voir dire before every trial starts. And so the same thing that a judge asks of a juror, he's being asked himself. His position is going to be, yes, I can follow the law. If you look, the discovery request that the defense has asked for, I've granted them. Even the ones where typically there would be a narrowing, for example, if something in the code said that the state is supposed to turn over all evidence in one particular hearing, the state was like, well, Judge, if this says all, we have to go and search the whole country from Washington State to Florida to San Diego to New York City for all it is, you know, can we get him to narrow what he's so we can figure out what he's looking for? And their position was, the law says all means all. I don't have to narrow anything, because I don't have to tell you what my theory is behind anything. I'm just telling you that all means all. And the judge had to follow the law and told the state, well, yeah, I get it. It's going to be all means all. You have to go look. And so when they played all of the videos from almost every episode of news over the course of several days in the court, the judge granted that. So the judge has granted things in the defense's favor, and so the judge has stuff to fall back on himself. And simply being, let's say, rude does not necessarily mean that a person cannot be partial when it comes to rendering a judgment. There have been plenty of times you'd be in the courtroom where the judge, you can tell that the judge is irritated because the prosecutors did something dumb, the cops did something dumb, or something happened where the judge is going to have to sign their name on a dismissal for someone that everybody in the room knows did it. But the judge holds their nose and they sign that order and then, you know, once the doors are closed, they get on everybody's butt for jacking the stuff up. So a judge, and you know, no judge likes to be thought as not being able to be impartial, you know, so the judge is going to stand his ground and say, I've done my job, I've been impartial, and I will continue to be impartial. You know, if you want me to smile more, you may not get that, but I can be impartial. So I do not believe that the motion to recuse will be granted.
Well, let me ask you this. How long have you been practicing law?
18 years.
18 years. Have you ever asked a judge to be recused because of you didn't like the way his tone with you? I mean, have you ever gone just because of his tone?
On something like, I've never filed for a judge to be recused. I thought of doing it several times, but not in the Tarrant County Courthouse. My issues in that arena as far as recusal has been with one of the other municipalities in Tarrant County and how their judges treat, I don't even want to say how their judges have applied the law in certain regards. We, you know, myself and numerous other attorneys have basically said, y'all can't do that. But because it's a municipal court, they've been like, well, you know, no one's ever challenged them. And so if the closest I've gotten to a recusal has been in one of those courts. But generally speaking, being rude or being mad one day is not going to be deemed as a basis for recusing a judge. That's why in their motion they tried to put other things that they believe statutorily or that they believe showed that the judge is presenting a bias, i.e. The judge tried to cut in line with the trials, you know, and so you're showing a bias. You're trying to, you know, to do something that's out of the ordinary and that harms our guy. You're trying to force the trial to be on this date when we have a key expert witness who we already told you and showed you that he was already set this day, so and so. And so, but just for being rude or something like that, no, judges don't have a blanket right to treat or talk to you in any way, shape, form, or fashion. You can file judicial complaints. They'll have the right to do that. But as far as a recusal, because the judge, you deem the judge rude or the judge said something unprofessional, that doesn't directly tie to a judge's ability to be impartial in rulings.
Okay, so what I'm understanding you to say is that what you've seen so far, you have not seen ground for recusal.
At all.
At all. Okay.
Whatever happened on
–
yes, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, finish.
No, I was just going to ask Leon, do you think they had – do you think they have grounds for a change of venue?
Yeah, I was going in there.
No. Mm-hmm. Now, that's where – excuse me. That's where stuff was starting to get kind of iffy and shaky. Because – and this is when – right off the bat, if you'll recall – and I thought it was fairly quick that the city of Fort Worth distanced themselves from Aaron Dean damn near straight away. And in the verbiage that they were using, the state official, mayor, and so forth, they were referring to it as the murder of a Tatiana Jefferson. Well, a murder is a legal conclusion. You understand? And so when they were out making statements that she was murdered, he murdered her, that's then before he's had a trial or had his day in court, you know, we all can view it and have our opinion on what transpired, but the fact remains he did intentionally kill her. Now, at some point, so she's the mayor of the largest city in the county, so most jurors are likely to come from the largest city in the county. And when you have council members going and hand-delivering letters and trying to be on the news, and you're naming freeways, you're doing all of this stuff, their position is the more you do this stuff, the more you're swaying the public, who any one of these people could be called to be on the jury. The more you whisper murder, 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 you know, the more you do all of these things to make him look like the bad guy, well, you're going to make it harder for me to keep this trial here. And so a long time ago, the defense attorneys were like, you know, y'all need to chill before you mess around and showboat or do something one too many times. And that, you know, so we anticipated that it would be filed. We also anticipated that it would be denied, you know, and that, and so a lot of ways, the way that a lot of times it's done is they'll say, we're going to start the trial and let's see if we can pick jurors. And if we can't, well, then your point's well taken if all of the jurors keep getting struck. But if we can see the jury, then it's obvious you can pick, and see the fair jury. But
well,
I do not think that they'll transfer a venue.
Okay, let me say this. In the case of Breonna Taylor, Boffin John, Laquan McDonald, Eric Gardner, and so many others, those trials were not moved despite the fact there was all kind of chatter, all kind of protests, all types of news coverage. So what makes Aaron Dean any more special than the officers in those cases?
Well,
Freddie, can I jump in on that one?
Go ahead, sir.
No, I was just going to say, I recalled like the first two times that Aaron Dean had came to court, he had people throwing stuff at him, yelling, hissing at him, things like that. And then Jim Lane was going to the judge talking about, you know, that's when they were first talking about change of venue. So they said that it's not going to be safe for him here. And they was talking about how this thing could lead to unrest. And, you know, and all this other stuff. I feel that they were angling a position to get it moved. Like, you know, if you get it out there to Wichita Falls or Waco or
Abilene.
Parker County.
Abilene. Yeah, that's a good one. Or Lubbock. That, yeah, they're going to do that. And then they're going to have a more, how do we put it, more reddish color to the scenario. And he could even walk on a murder. I think even just trying for murder is kind of a stretch because in that instance, that was more of a involuntary manslaughter than a murder.
You talking in which case?
No, I'm talking about Aaron Dean.
No.
I just don't believe. No, because, I mean, I was just speaking about the interpretation of where they're going to be coming from. They're going to say Aaron Dean had no malicious intentions of killing Tatiana Jefferson. And it would be considered, you know, accidental homicide or something. They have the position to kind of play with it that way.
I disagree. Let me set it up then. Okay, for anybody who does not know what the news coverage, and I am just going to say what's been stated in the news. So this isn't breaking news. This is just repeating news. We know that this happened the early morning of October 12, 2019, at the house that was near the intersection of Allen and Mississippi. We know that the doors and the windows were open to this house, and we know that neighbors from across the street were coming in late that night, noticed it, and told James Smith. James Smith then looked out for himself and saw that to be true, and then he called the non-emergency number for the police department and asked that a welfare check be done. We know after that police officers did not pull up in front of the house. They parked around the corner. We know that when they came, if you're facing the house, if anybody's been on that street, if you're facing the house, both doors are facing the street. So doors and windows were open and were facing the street, and they did not announce themselves. And so they passed the open doors, they passed the open windows, and went into a secure area that was gated. So we understand at that point that Atatiana Jefferson must have heard something in the backyard, went to the window that was facing the backyard, and at that time, possibly, that's when Aaron Dean saw her. He began to yell, put your hands up, put your hands up. And before he even gave her a chance to even comply, without even announcing that he was a police officer, we know that he shot her. We know that at that time she was in the house, you know, playing video games with her nephew, Zina. So when you say manslaughter, I want to know, how do you come to the conclusion that that's manslaughter?
Because there was no malicious
intent. Let me ask this. He didn't follow police protocol, which was to announce himself several times and then to shout verbal commands and repeat them so that she understands. So he was supposed to announce he was police several times and then repeat commands to her so that he knew that she understood.
Right, and that's where the culpability of negligence comes in. You know what I mean? There's a difference between negligent homicide and murder. So I mean, I'm sure Leon would agree with me on that.
Well,
there's a difference.
Let me hear the big difference between any manslaughter in Texas is an unintentional killing. Whether it reckless does not mean intentional. They are two separate things under the law. Now, the any intentional killing in Texas, regardless of who did it, if they intentionally killed someone, you're sitting on a murder until you prove an exception, i.e. self-defense. So any intentional killing, right off the bat, murder. Okay, now, so anytime a police officer discharges his or her weapon, they are trained to shoot to kill. There is no doubt that when he shot her, his intention was to kill her. So he acted with intent. He intentionally discharged his firearm. If you intentionally discharge your firearm, you are intentionally trying to kill the person on the other end. The biggest question will be that even if you claim an exception, i.e. self-defense, that self-defense must still be reasonable. And if your use of force is deemed unreasonable, you don't get that self-defense exclusion. Same thing with Amber Guyer. They said, she said, I thought I was in my apartment. I thought I was in my place. The jury said, that's not reasonable. There's a big red mat. You're on a totally different floor. There's a lot of other circumstances that should have tipped you off, or any reasonable person would have known that they were not at their right place. So you don't get that exclusion. So when we apply that here, was it reasonable for Aaron Dean to bypass the open doors and walk into the backyard? You know, the question is going to be, why didn't you just knock on the door? It wasn't an emergency call. Why didn't you just knock on the door? Was it reasonable that you bypassed the door? Was it reasonable that you went into someone's backyard, snooping and pooping after hours with a flashlight in their backyard? Was it reasonable that you yelled out to her, didn't acknowledge that you were a police officer, was it reasonable that you fired your weapon with the intent to kill without giving the person on the other end an opportunity to comply? So there are several legal humps of reasonableness that they are going to have to convince a jury that, hey, all of his actions were reasonable. And how could they do that? Now, if you ask me, as Leon Reed, my position is his actions were unreasonable. Therefore, he should not be afforded a self-defense. Now, if you ask attorney Leon Reed, you know, then what do I think they're going to try to do? Well, since the department ran away from him so quickly, I believe that he's going to point the finger straight to the department and said, I did what I was trained to do. I acted in accordance with my training. Look, the police department has had a substantial history of mistreating minorities from way back in the day, with the Klan chapters being headed and founded by the chief of police, to the modern day statistics of racial profiling data. Not 1 year of data has come out where African Americans have not been overly policed, more stopped, cited, arrested, including Hispanics, more so than their representative population. When you look at the use of force reports from the city of Fort Worth, African Americans are always on the receiving end the majority of the time of uses of force. Why was it that untrained or when you look at the use of force reports, over 50%, please don't believe me, just Google Fort Worth Police Department use of force reports, look at them, you'll see that the majority of that pie, typically 50% of it or more, are officers with 2 to 5 years experience committing the vast majority of the uses of force. So what do we have here? We have an officer who'd been an officer a couple of years in a neighborhood that he wasn't accustomed to patrolling. He's doing it at night. And so who gets the night shift? The rookies and folk you're mad at. When you're senior, you work your way off the night shift. So you got the people with the least amount of experience out. And if you look, you know, that he's in a community where he doesn't understand the culture of the community, but he's acting in accordance with the culture of the department. And so, therefore, you could argue that he was acting reasonably because he was acting in accordance with the culture of the department. If I'm going to have a defense, that's where I would probably be aiming this thing. Are you following me?
That was my next question. That was my next question, Leon. Are these type of, like these stats and these figures that you're talking about now, are these things that are routinely brought into trials for the jury?
No. And again, I've been an advocate, and again, everything that I tell you has a City of Fort Worth logo on it. Okay?
Uh-huh.
You know, every report that I mention, the City of Fort Worth Police Department typically keeps the last 3 or 4 racial profiling reports on their website, but I have them all the way back to when the state legislature in 2002 mandated them, and every year, without exception, without fail, it doesn't matter what year you choose, African Americans and Hispanics have been disproportionately stopped, cited, arrested, and searched, period. When you look at the use of force reports, go ahead. We can take questions.
Yeah. Okay, so y'all listen. If you're just tuned in or you've been holding for a while, listen, if you'd like to chime in on tonight's topic, the call-in number is 515-605-9321. Then press 1 once connected. That's 515-605-9321. Then press 1 once connected. 817-378, you've been holding since we've been on. Good evening. You're Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Peace and blessings, Brother Reed, Brother Carey, Sister Carey. And I've listened to what the interpretations, and I had an opportunity to speak to Judge O'Brien. Number one, That was private property, which the officer had no jurisdiction to go in that back. Yo, let's get that clear. Penal Code 942, I do believe, which I stated and reenacted the whole thing that this officer did. Number one, the woman got a right to protect her property. The backyard is attached to the house. That's why in marriage warrant for you to go in that backyard. Number one, the general order of wellness call Mr. Dean didn't follow. Got this from the previous chief. If you recall what Mr. Krause said, that's why he terminated him, because he disobeyed general orders. What he did to me and to the judge, Joe Brown, which I hold on high respect, that's flat murder. See, diversion tactics as flashing that flashlight to draw her out, draw that target out, as I displayed in that council meeting, being that you in a high crime era in Allen. I'm from the South Side. I know what goes on over there. You have a lot of crime. It's rather high over there. So quite naturally, if she's there to protect her properties like any other human being, you're going to do what it takes to protect your property when you see somebody flashing a light through your property. And so what he did to me, he fired before he seen that moment. Because I went to the scene, Brother Leon, bullet hole through that window, bullet hole through that screen, and no bullet hole through them blinds. So them blinds was up, comrade. Understand me? So it's no, they going to play it on the qualified immunity blast. You know what I'm saying? My whole thing, we seen cameras from the news media from a certain angle. But when you go back there and go reenact that crime scene, which we never did see the other camera from the other officer, why has that been suppressed? We don't know. But, you know, when you go back there and you go reenact that scene, it's clearly and stately what that officer did. And so, you know, I don't get the system. Only thing I know that we are in election period. I don't know if they trying to play it till we get past the election period, because this ain't no rocket science case. Because if you and I, anybody that's Afro-American been on this panel, they done ran us through the system less than 90 days. So, you know, we can play with ourselves. We can try to rationalize this. You know, they BS, you know. It is what it is when it comes to that arena. They there to protect white interests, and they continue to protect white interests. How much money has Hangman took from the POA, Brother Reed? Can you tell me that? Are you privy to that?
I don't know that.
How much money has that DA took? How much money has that DA took from the POA?
I have no idea.
And now, you know how long she been sitting in that seat, Brother Reed?
She got elected in 2014.
Mm. Okay, and it's 2022. And it's, every time she didn't came up, she been back by the blue. Well, Leon, we know how the game go, bro, between the chief and that DA. We ain't for the play this. It's a hamster wheel. They are two or the same when it comes to that head DA and that police chief. And they're going to do what they can to protect their interest when it comes to that department. But mainly thing is, man, we got to come clean about what it is, what they do. They playing these bull crap games with us. 3 years is almost 3 years is too long. It's way too long. I mean, we talk about this. Hold on, sister. Let me get this out.
Mm-hmm.
What about the grieving family? I ain't heard nobody talk about that. How long should they carry this weight on their shoulders, brother? They trying to make it seem like Dean is the victim.
Well, since you said you know Joe Brown, I guess I can just chime in just like that then.
Right. What all these things you're talking about is what they call difference with definite distinctions. And when you break it all down, no matter how you want to go with the actual factual of the whole scenario of everything, at the end of the day, as what was said earlier, is the fact that it's all about politics, unfortunately. And
yes, sir.
When you have handshakes being done all the time on a daily basis, rather, mm-hmm. you know, PA rubs noses with the labor unions and the police labor
right.
unions start coming up with things to get things turned around and all of this and that and the other. And the next thing you know, it's just a big damn mess.
Correct.
So, you about to start laughing. No, but seriously, though, that is part of what we was talking about. That's the circle of this process they're doing, because they would not have taken nearly this long. Let's say if Tatiana Jefferson had shot him, you think mm-hmm. that she would have had the benefit of doubt of self-defense? More than likely not. And the fact that she had, because you remember when she first died, they was ready to throw her under the bus right off the bat about her having a gun.
Mm-hmm.
Like nobody else has guns at their home. And when you hear something in the backyard, yeah, I'm going outside with my gun. They ain't going out there saying, Ali, Ali, oxygen free, and I don't know what's going on. So that's something that, you know, let's try to keep it real, because, you know, if I hear something rattling in my backyard, I'm coming back there, and I better know that you're a cop, because I'm coming around to shoot. I ain't coming to talk.
But hasn't it been said that this DA does not prosecute officers? Has that been said?
You know, news flash. Most DAs don't prosecute officers. Why are you going to prosecute people who are financing your campaign?
Right on.
Name one DA that's not taking a dollar from a police union.
Right on.
So I would like to meet that person. I'd like to meet them, shake their hand. That's the first endorsement they get.
Right on.
Any of them.
All right, Malik, does that answer your question?
I was just saying, because really I was there up front. And when I blasted and roared, my voice went across America and across that war. And so, like I said, that's why I referred how I reenacted everything that they did. I have military relatives in my family, and they explained to me exactly what that dude did. They are trained to do that. That's what I'm saying is the intent. Like Brother Reed was saying, but from what the authorities of XG's, that dude did something. He didn't comply to general order when it came to a wellness check. That's gross and negligent on his side. When his presiding chief said termination, right off the muscle.
And then that's the part where they try to chop that all up on the settlement. Fiduciary settlement for their family, they have already addressed all those issues.
Correct.
All right, thanks, Malik.
But on the criminal part, that's the part that we're still trying to pass through.
Okay, y'all, we're going to go to 972-987. Good evening, you're on Let's Talk Footwork. 972-987.
No, okay, I'm just listening tonight, kid. Carrie, I'm just listening tonight.
Okay. All right. There's a lot going on in terms of, first of all, and I asked you this, Attorney Reed, because you deal with attorney fees. What kind of money are we talking about Aaron Dean has probably spent up to this point? I mean,
Aaron Dean probably hasn't spent very much money at all. The Peace Officers Association.
For lunch.
The Peace Officers Association, and they've probably gotten donations from various police officers associations across the country, are the ones who are primarily funding the defense team, and you're talking. I would say knowing, and again, I know Judd Gill, I know Miles Brissett, you know, because at the end of the day, we're all defense attorneys, and Jim. So none of these guys are fly by night. They're not. When you step to their office, you already know you finna spend cheese, and so I would estimate over at least a half mil, if not higher. I would say a half mil for 150 potential witnesses, the experts. Again, Miles is a techie. He's a that type of forensic guy that they'll make videos, they'll make their all of that stuff takes time and hours, and they may be billing $350-$400 an hour. And so the amount, and so when judge orders the discovery and says all means all, and they go back and they come back with 100 boxes worth of stuff, well, now I got to sit down and I got to read every piece of paper in that 100 boxes, and I'm sending them the bill. You understand? So, so, and again, so, and therein, if I say, Judge, I need all means all, and they say, well, shoot, Judge, it'll take us 2 months to get it. Okay, that's 2 months. Well, Judge, we just got it back. I gave him 100 boxes. Well, I'm going to need 3 months to read. That's 5 months. And that's 5 months. Mm-hmm. You understand? You know, so therein, you can start to see where time can come into play. But again, most people aren't going to be able to cut that check in order to keep me reading and going through all of that, and that's why you don't get
all credit to the taxpayers of Tarrant County.
That's why you don't get that kind of delay when it's somebody who isn't wealthy and who can't afford to pay for all of that.
So, y'all, we're talking.
Yeah, that's a good point, because most of the people that get prosecuted like this are poor people. And one of the, a friend of mine told me this a long time ago. It may be a crude way of saying it, but it makes all the sense. He says, when you are in trouble with the law, it's like eating a turd sandwich. The more bread you have in your hand, the less shit you got to eat.
Oh,
that's what you're dealing with when you're dealing with the legal system.
Ha.
So,
yeah,
I mean, O.J. Simpson spent $12 million to get acquitted on that case, only to be the first person in American history to go to prison for stealing his own stuff. That's the irony of the justice system.
But, see, we're at 979 days since the murder. That's like 2 years, 8 months. So who is, like you say, nobody could afford this defense. Five attorneys, out of jail with all these delays and all of these witnesses. This is crazy.
But I could tell you right off the top, take 365 times two off of that. So take 730 days or whatnot off of that, because the courts were closed and people were prohibited from having trials. And then the people in custody have a priority over people out on bond. He may have spent a night in jail and he's been out on bond, but if Mrs. Johnson's baby boy been sitting in jail and he's been hollering he's innocent and he can't afford the bond and he want his day in court, everybody gonna be, Miss Johnson's gonna be, hey, I want my son to have his day in court. I get it. I wholly get
right.
it. And as I've stated, I don't believe his actions were reasonable, but what's presented in trial is what's going to matter to the jurors. And at the end of the day, they're going to have to be able to say that his conduct was reasonable in regardless of whatever exception he tries to put up there. They're going to have to be able to say he was reasonable. And I think that the way that if I were the defense attorney, I would point my finger at the department that trained me wrong. And if I did it wrong, it's their fault. I acted like I was trained to do, you know, and let them try to, because I can't imagine any other defense.
Somebody said to me this week that the partner turned state's evidence, because we still to this day don't even know who was with him that night. They never gave her name. So is it likely that's what happened?
I wouldn't say, you know, turn state's evidence or whatnot. The person's just a witness. And if that person's a witness, they're going to get interviewed and called just like anybody else. You are a witness, and you have body cams. If on your body cam you ran back there because you heard a shot and you got back, and you're like, dude, what the freak? I saw somebody in the window. What, in the house? They go in the house and they look, oh, man, you know, who? All of that may be on video that has not been released. I'm guaranteeing you there's going to be just the same type of a bloody video, and I don't think Ahmaud Arbery, when you saw the videos of him in the street taking his last breath multiple times, we are likely to see, when the date and time comes, something similar when it comes to this young lady, because all of the videos have not been released to the public. Okay, so but the officer is certainly a witness who will be called by the DA's office.
Melissa,
you know, and so
he's saying that they said that the other officer that was with him, her body cam was broke. How convenient. But she was in the backyard too.
Always convenient. Body cameras always malfunction or break down when some shit's going on.
Yeah.
I argue that all the time when they, we've been surveilling this residence. Okay, well, where's your body camera, or where's your, you know, if you were working undercover and had a setup on this house across the street, you ain't had a cell phone, you ain't had nothing, you know. And so we'll see at the end of the day.
Right. I mean,
just like
with Bolton and John, seems like those cameras that was in the hallways, those never appeared. Seems like they just conveniently malfunctioned permanently since that shooting. Now, I'm sure we all know why.
And a lot of stuff in this day and age, the police are starting not to get the amount of favor, or we're just not going to give you that anymore. You're going to have to show us. That's, you know, the more cases, the more trials that we have, the more the police are going to be held to the standard of, no, you got to show me. No, your body camera should have been on. No, you should not have muted your body camera. You know, all of these things where they were being given a pass, they're not going to be given that same leeway anymore. They're going to have to come in and account for their actions, especially when someone dies, you know, and they should, because the same reasoning, if there is no consequence for getting it wrong, what is the incentive to do it right? And if they don't have consequences for doing things the wrong way, then there's no incentive to do it the right way. And so at some point, now the public is demanding consequences for doing stuff wrong. I think Pandora's box is open on that, and the cat is out the bag.
So,
typically,
doesn't the prosecution and the defense come together when you're talking about different delays and things like that? Isn't that normally something that's discussed and you all work it out, rather than you get all of these delays from, or requests for delays from the defense without ever, you know, asking the prosecution, you know, okay, is that going to work for you? Is that a good day for you? Why aren't we seeing
all of
that?
All of the judges, since I've been practicing law a long time ago, they signed, I think it's called the differential trial management. It's a local rule that all of the judges signed on to that all of the attorneys must comply by. And so in Tarrant County, on a felony charge, they have two tracks, like complex and basically standard. Now, your first docket will be an initial appearance docket to see if you have an attorney. Once you have an attorney, your next docket is consultation dockets. They're typically set a month apart. After the consultation docket, you go to evidence exchange. That's another month apart. Then after evidence exchange, motions docket. After motions docket, status conference. Status conference means you're the last step before getting put on the trial docket. Now, when you start having the status conferences and the trial dockets, you could have multiple ones, but each one of these is typically a month apart, and every time you go to docket, y'all supposed to be trying to figure out, have I gotten the stuff that, hey, when I came last docket, I asked you for this. I haven't gotten it yet. What's the deal with it? The officer didn't get it to me, or my guy's still getting it. Okay, we'll let the judge know and proceed to the next docket. If something comes up and you gave me something or my investigator found out something, I may tell you, I may not tell you, but if their guys found out something and they have to turn it over to us, they turn it over to us, well, shoot, now I get a chance to go vet and investigate what I just got. And so typically you will try to get all of these things done so that when it comes time to announce for status conference, hey, who's all in here ready to go to trial? And so the judges may set 100 cases on a status conference or 100 cases on a trial docket, and they will order them by the oldest case and who's in custody. Those are the people who would typically go first, and whoever's number one, oldest case, and your client is in custody, you're going to trial. Oh, we worked it out. Case number two, you're up. Oh, we signed a plea agreement. Case number three, judge, we dismissed that one. Dude number four, you're ready to pick the jury. And so, again, there are really, quite frankly, there are a lot of defense attorneys who are saying, why in the world are we having any trials right now on anybody that's out on bond when we got people still in jail who've been in jail for over a year waiting on their trials? So some defense attorneys are like, we shouldn't be having any trials that are out on bond right now until we get these people out of jail on older cases.
Let me just say this real quick. The reason why they're doing it, and it's very abrasive on their part. They feel like, well, they're in jail, they're not going anywhere, so we don't have to worry about them. And then they also hoping that eventually these people are going to tap out and just take a plea deal, so now they ain't got to worry about a trial. So that's how most of the justice systems are handling these type of cases right now. And, yeah, there are a lot of people that are locked up right now that never could afford the bond, and they're just sitting there because, it's like, you know, they go off and they'll ask them every other month, you want to do time served? You want to go ahead and plead guilty?
Let me say this real quick. When it comes, if you'll recall, Gill and Brissett were not hired on initially. No, they were not. Jim Lane was initially hired. When Jim started to take ill, that's when he brought in Gill and Brissett. If you recall, during the John Romer trial, where they punched Henry over, you know, who was waiting on his ride at the hospital. You know, so they had just had to pay a lot of money to Jim Lane on that case. And so they may have had, that's when they may have put the word out, we need more money. And when they hired Gill and Brissett, all of the defense attorneys knew what that was going to come with. That was going to come with a bunch of motions because Judge Bob Gill writes the book on the Texas Criminal Law Practice Guide that prosecutors and defense attorneys use. He writes the book. So this man is a paper man. He knows the law. He reads the case law, the new decisions that come down every year and over the course of the year. He reads them. He's up to speed on them. So if he reads something that's going to be favorable to one of his clients, he's going to file a motion. And that's his thing, you know. And everybody knows what Brissett is going to bring. He's going to tech you. He's going to take all of the evidence. He's going to make the videos. He's going to know the longitude and the latitude of where every cop was on the scene. And so when they got hired, it was like, okay, this is heavyweight against heavyweight. This is not, this is going to be a heavyweight fight.
Okay, let me see. Let me say this.
Great analogy.
I believe that the delays are because they really don't have a defense. That's just my personal opinion, you know, for what it's worth. So, you know, if that is the case, what's the likelihood that they will plea out?
He's not going to enter a plea.
Oh.
No. Yeah, he's right about
it's
that.
Not going, this is going to, this is a trial. Now, so what do juries typically do? When they say, well, look, Eric Dean doesn't seem like a bad guy, you know, and, yeah, the department did had a bad culture, and he was probably trained wrong, and they didn't have all of the senior people that weren't working the third shift. That's a leadership problem, by the way. You know, I don't care what your seniority is. If the kids at night are messing up, I'm finna put the senior people out on the night shift to keep them fools from doing that crazy stuff. But anyway, if the jury says, yeah, he's not that bad, but, yeah, he did intentionally kill her and he jacked up, you'll get the type of sentence you got with Amber's case. You'll get, you're convicted, but we're going to sentence you to 10 years because the punishment range is 5 to 99 or life. So when you look at 99, okay, Amber got then she got 10% of the sentence because they thought she was a good girl. But somebody's life had been taken, so there has to be situations where you intentionally kill somebody, get convicted of murder, you can get put on probation for murder, okay? You may not have been the shooter, but you were there with the shooter and you knew what was going to happen. You got convicted of murder. Okay, well, you just got, you know, probation for 10 years for murder, you know, or they could, again, they could give him 5 years and say, yes, he murdered her, he was wrong, and we're going to sentence him, but we're going to sentence him to the minimum because we think the department bears a lot of this and it wasn't just his fault. Or they could sentence him to 50, you know, but so we also have to be prepared for that. Because the juries will compromise.
It's not likely, though.
Leon, I was going to ask you this. Couldn't Aaron Dean, after all this old, couldn't he actually turn back around and sue the police department?
For what?
If he's acquitted. He can't, I don't think he can sue them because he didn't get fired. He resigned.
Okay.
And so when you resign, you can't turn around and sue somebody when you left. Now,
mm-hmm.
Had he gotten fired, you know, then now what could he potentially sue for? Well, if everybody, the mayor and all of these council people were out there calling him a murderer, you know, and it ended up that the jury acquitted him, well, maybe. Maybe. I think it's thin, but maybe.
Right.
You know. But, Carrie, you had a question?
No, I'm really trying to understand, and I hear what you all are saying, but I just don't understand a defense at all, because if we're in a stand-your-ground state, I have a right to defend my property and be in my home. And so knowing the circumstances, as I read them earlier, like I said, that wasn't breaking news. I'm repeating news. So if she was in her own home playing video games with her nephew in the middle of the night, minding her own business, whether her doors and windows were open or not, that was her right. So knowing all of that, I just don't see how a plea deal isn't going to happen. I think that's the reason for so many delays, in my opinion, my humble opinion, that they can't figure this out. Unless they get somebody to act some kind of way, FYI, protesters doing something really crazy, and get a venue change, and then hopefully he can get off in another county. But I really don't think in Tarrant County they feel, you know, that they're going to be able to get him off. So that's why I don't see how a plea deal is not inevitable.
I don't think there's going to be a plea deal. Too much money has been spent. unless something, at the end of the day, it's going to come down to that one word, reasonable. You can holler every defense that you want, but that defense still must be reasonable. And if 12 people sitting over there say that was not reasonable, then you're going to get convicted. Now, one person could say that was reasonable. They say, you know what? They did jack up in the way that they trained him. They did leave him out to dry. They did have the young dudes out there with minimal supervision. And so what he did, given the circumstances, yeah, given the circumstances, one person could say, I think his actions were reasonable, and now you got a mistrial. And now you got to turn around and do it all over again. You know, what do you do if 5 out of 7 people say his actions were reasonable and 7 say guilty? You know, you got to try it all over again. You understand? But everything is going to come, regardless of the defense, he's going to, because he did intentionally kill her. That's the starting point. He intentionally killed her. That is unrefuted. So they're going to have to come with an exception, and that exception has to be reasonable. And so as quickly as the department turned their backs on him, his defense is point the finger at the department, how jacked up the department is, and how they poorly trained me. They put me in this situation, and now this young lady's life is lost, and, you know, here we are. It's their fault, not mine.
Well, let me say this. Isn't there a rule in a shooting that they don't have to make the report for X amount of days? Is it 72 hours? Something like that.
Yeah,
that's what they was doing in Dallas.
Garrity kicks in when police officers, you know, get involved like that. They automatically get appointed CLEAT attorneys.
Right.
And they show up, and that may be, I mean, I'm just thinking on the fly because I hadn't had to get rid. That may be one of the reasons why he resigned so quickly, because had he remained in the department, he may have been forced to speak with the attorneys and generate paperwork within the department.
Right.
And so if he resigns, then he's not under that obligation. And so go ahead.
That's one reason that rule should be moved, because anytime there's a shooting, I think the officer should be questioned just like they would anybody at the scene. Zion was questioned that night. He was taken to an undisclosed location and questioned that night. So in my opinion, if you will question an 8-year-old child after he saw his auntie murdered in front of him, then surely the officer who took the shot should be able to, with all of his training, go and give a statement about what just happened. But I think, okay, I think 72 hours is way too much time to come up with a story. I think when it's fresh on your
That's
mind,
what
you
it
should commit. Hold on. And had they allowed him or made him give his statement, then we wouldn't be in the shape that we're in right now. If they had taken his statement that night, as opposed to giving him 72 hours to make his statement. Right?
And then
you got to remember
from Garrity. And you can just Google police Garrity, and you'll see that the Garrity exception isn't a Texas thing. It's national. And because it came from case law, you know, Garrity versus New Jersey, but you can find, but the Supreme Court, the court said that in those circumstances, these are the steps that have to be taken. And so with the Supreme Court the way it is right now, that's not about to change. Qualified immunity only deals with civil suits. It doesn't deal with criminal acts. You know, so. Go ahead.
Malik is making a point. Why are we drug testing them after these shootings? You're not asking them any questions for 72 hours. You're not drug testing. You're not taking a urinalysis. What are we doing?
That's a problem. I mean, the public wants that, okay, but the law is the law. And so how do you change the law? You elect people to change the law. And so you, in this case, you want to change a Supreme Court ruling. Well, you do what the Republicans just did. Elect people that will put more Republicans on the Supreme Court and overturn the stuff that's already been in place. So, you know, if we're going to go down that road, it's going to come, that road is going to lead right to the ballot box. And people need to shut up about not voting and get the freak up and go vote.
Right. Well, you know what?
Right.
A minute ago, you all said training. Okay. When Gerald Fitzgerald was there, there were no shootings. Immediately after he left, 6 months in, they had 10 shootings and 7 were fatal. So is it about training or was it about something else once Gerald Fitzgerald was no longer the police chief?
It's culture and training. When you have a culture, I've forgotten his name, but a police officer, I think it was in 1992, was caught on video beating a black male, Fort Worth, that he had handcuffed to the door. And he, you know, when he got in trouble, he said, "Hey, I followed my training." That's in the newspaper, in the New York Times.
I remember that.
So, and you can Google it, or I can send it to you. I'm just not in a position to because I'm at a conference right now in San Antonio. However, when you have my hips won't let me do it this way. But when you have a culture of being away, of being able to get away with stuff, when you have a culture that over a period of 20 years, and that's just since it's been mandated to be reported, but over 20 years, African Americans and Hispanics are stopped, searched, cited. You know what I'm about to say. When you have a culture of the use of force where the preponderance of the uses of force are committed by this group of officers against this group of the public, when you have a culture of non-accountability, just like your kids will do, they'll push the envelope to find out where the boundaries are. And there's always one kid or one day you're going to go one step too far and you're going to catch that whooping. And if the other kids see, they're going to say, "Okay, that don't go over there. That's too far. Right here, I'm okay." You understand? This,
yeah.
You know, he pushed too far.
Really?
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Ben.
So now the department is having to take steps to try to rein in something that's been roaming free for a long time, and it's hard to go out there and wrangle that wild stallion when it's been used to having its way, doing its own thing, and it's big, bold, and strong. You know, any entity that you give that much authority to over that length of time is going to be resistant in giving that authority back.
I agree.
Right.
You know, where are the crowds? Right after this, we saw crowds of people, and over this course of this 2 years, 8 months, the crowd has just dwindled to just maybe a handful. So was this strategic on the part of the defense? Because they assumed after a while the people would just go away?
The day in court is going to come, and at some point they're going to have to face the music, and at that point all eyes are going to be on Fort Worth, Texas. And so that day is coming. And again, once they have the hearing on the 23rd, the administrative judge in Gallagher, he's like, "Look, whichever judge set a schedule so that we know y'all are working towards this date, and that is the date." And so the date is coming, but when I tell different various groups when something happens and everybody immediately knows it's wrong, and you have the large throng down at City Hall maybe 2 to 3 weeks in a row, and then you start to get the dissipation, the city council knows that's going to happen. Okay, well, we know we're about to have a couple of long nights this Tuesday, next Tuesday. Let's move the meeting till 3 o'clock in the afternoon. That way we won't have to be here all night. And then it's going to start to dissipate. Well, because everybody's expending their energy and efforts, and folk got to work, and they mad, but even mad folk at some point will calm down, you understand? But so I try to tell people, look, you have to be strategic in your efforts. If everybody shows up the first 3 weeks and, you know, and then everybody wanes, well, y'all got to start say, hey, this is your week to go down. Y'all take y'all so that over the course of 2 to 3 years, every meeting they have 40 people in there sitting there asking the same questions, and it's a different 40 folk. That 40, my rotation may be once every 6 weeks as opposed to every Tuesday. That way, folks, you know, you still get your point across. No, we're still here, and you know why we're here. You understand?
Right.
And you're not burning yourself out. We have to be strategic in our protests. Every protest that they had during the civil rights movement had an end. It had a goal. They had training. Hey, we're training tonight at this church or this community center. I'm pouring it on you. I'm ripping it off your shirt. If you can't handle it in the safe environment of the church or the community center, you can't go with us to go sit at these counters.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't abide by the laws that we're telling, here's the law, stay off of this. Stay between this and that. They can't mess with you. Step over here. You're in trouble, and they can arrest you. If you can't abide, then this ain't for you. You understand? And so, but sometimes protests need to be disruptive. Yeah, I'm going to step over here. I want you to arrest me. Arrest us all. Arrest all 700 of us. We're going to overcrowd your jail, so we're going to make it futile. We're going to encumber, burden the system, you understand? So, but you have to do it in a way that you're not going to burn the bridges of the public eye.
Mm.
Because you always, the reason you're doing it is to have the public look and say, you know what, that is messed up what y'all doing to them. I'm going to get on a plane from Philadelphia and fly down to Mississippi to help, because I think that, but if you're doing it in a wrong way, that person isn't going to make that effort. You understand what I'm saying? And so, go ahead.
But what I'm noticing is all those people, and I won't go on the names, but it was the people who had the real hard barks. You know, they was barking, we going to do this and we going to do that and we going, and listen, we ain't going away. We go, you know. All of that, we don't get it, we going to shut it down. But those are the people that are the quietest right now. So how did they make those people go away?
You get the best of intentions.
Call
just
time.
So, you know,
yeah,
it's
time
the
you
best
make anybody
intentions.
Go away.
It's time.
But see,
it's, yeah, it's
they're
going
to be there.
Right.
They're going to be in full effect. So they're not worried about anything. They got all the time in the world to play around. While we're sitting up here just trying to deal with our already our everyday life, and then you try to take on this as a side issue that, you know, eventually, you know, you'll wane on something else, and then they're going to go ahead and make their grab.
And we have to be more disciplined as
yeah.
protesters and whatnot. I often tell people 381, can you last 381? Because that 381 days was the bus boycott.
Mm-hmm.
Black folk invented ride sharing. It wasn't Uber, it wasn't Lyft,
yeah.
It was us. You know, and for 381 days, we walked, we ride shared, we didn't give the city any money until they had to say, you know what, y'all, we need to let these folk ride anywhere they want to on the bus. But
mm-hmm.
we can't do that nowadays as modern black folk. We can't boycott downtown Fort Worth. We're going to go to high-res, or we're going to go to this, you know. But when you start messing with money on a city level, now
yeah.
What could the city do? The city don't run the district courts. Those are county. But you know, the mayor and all of these, if they see that, hey, city of Fort Worth is losing millions and millions of dollars. If you show up to protest when ESPN comes downtown to Sundance Square for the kickoff football game, that's when you protest. You understand? And
okay.
To the point where you you dissuade ESPN from even showing up. We ain't going to Fort Worth. Y'all got issues down there. And you know what? We don't think that they're right. So because we agree with the public, we're not going to go there. You understand? So then you have the mayor calling the DA and call, hey, can we get this stuff? But again, the DA has said they're ready. The defense attorneys are, hey, we're going to go when we think we got every piece of paper that we need. You know, we ain't trying to run into this trial without anything that we don't need. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, then you got to worry about the other trial in that Garrett Hull murder. They got one more they got to prosecute. So I presume they about to get this first one over with, but they still got another one to go.
Okay, y'all, let's go back to the
Do you have any other people sitting out there? Go ahead. Go ahead.
We're going to go to 817-946. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Yeah, this is Gerald Banks Sr. I was just wanting to elaborate on the fact of what they were saying of them quieting down with the protests and everything. Why? When you got a bunch of protesters that you have that's been paid, put in positions on board, got pastors that persuading the members, you got, at this point, just like you said, when you boycott, when did the boycott stop for the city of Fort Worth? I didn't get a memo on that. So at this point, it's like we should still be boycotting, but you don't hear anything about it.
I agree. But so Joe, let me ask you this. You know, the crowds were just enormous at first. I mean, the city hall was packed week after week for a couple of weeks, and then those people are the people you just don't see saying anything now. And that's very surprising to me because some of those people I thought had longevity in the thing, and I'm surprised that I don't see it.
And that's what I'm talking about. You got a lot of those people were put in positions. A lot of them were paid. A lot of them were, you know, whatever it took to quieten them down. That's what they did. I mean, you know, I've spoken down there on several occasions, and in my speeches, I've put that in my speeches about, you know, where are they at. When the rotunda is pretty much empty, when you got two or three protesters or activists that's left, when you got activists indicating, Mr. Banks, we're not going down there anymore. What is that telling you? When you got a pastor telling you, we're not going down there anymore. Okay, I never was with y'all. I was with myself when I went down there. I didn't get a ride to downtown to speak, you know?
But why did they say they're not going back, though? Please elaborate. What was their reason that they said they're not going to go back?
Money, board positions, other entities. That's why. Look at it. Check out everybody that was considered themselves as leaders and see where they're at now. See that you don't see them on some board or some pastor or something that they're doing something pertaining to the city, or they got 300 and some thousand in their community to upgrade their community or this and that. You know, you look at it. Just go back and filter them out and see what's going on with them. And
wow. And I think you're right. I something's going on. I mean, and at the same time, I don't think we realize that, you know, an injustice, Dr. King said, an injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. So if you turn your head on this one, do you turn your head on the next one and the next one and the next one?
Just think. You got a congregation of over 1,000 members. You can have the power of persuasion of those members. Those black churches can tell, and those pastors can tell their members to hit those streets and protest, and it's a whole big change. You want change. You want to continue to say change, change this and change that, but then they're not changing themselves.
And you know what I think, and this is just me, and I'm not native to Fort Worth, but I've been here a really long time. I think this community is not where it needs to be in terms of unity. We do good, you know, when something initially pops off, but we just wean like way like into like zero. We start at 80, you know, when something popped off, and then the next thing you know, we wean down to zero. And I think what we don't realize is that the city is watching. And so if they realize and they study you, what it takes to make you quiet or get you quiet, then they're going to do that. And so I think, you know, if you're not going to be in it for the long haul, then don't go out there screaming louder than everybody else. And, you know, come on. Be
right.
Real. I'm disappointed. I guess what I can say. I'm just disappointed.
You see, I've noticed that from the time that Ra-Ra got killed over there.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's when I noticed that. And that's when I started speaking after the Jack and Craig situation. You know, with William Martin and the Jack and Craig situation and me having a run-in with William Martin, that's what lit the fire under me to continue to speak up and stand up, speak up, and speak out against all of this.
Okay, right.
And
well, you know, I'm right there with you.
It led right on up to a Tatiana Jefferson. If they'd have nipped that in the bud, then it wouldn't have been a Tatiana Jefferson situation.
And y'all, to be honest with you, tonight's show is like coming full circle for me, because when the Fort Worth PD first started harassing me, it was because of my coverage on Sherrall Thomas. So tonight is full circle. It really feels like a deja vu moment, because that's what I got on the radar when we spoke with the family and the passenger of Sherrall Thomas, the passenger who was in the car that night, and his family, his mother, his sister, his brother. And so it's been crazy ever since. So tonight is, like I say, a deja vu moment. But I so agree with you, Gerald, that somebody has got to have gotten something, because folks just got quiet out of nowhere and they got nothing to say. So I thank you for calling in tonight, brother, and we appreciate, you know, your steadfastness down there when we see you at City Hall.
Okay, I appreciate you having and enjoying your show.
Thank you. We're going to go back to 972-987. Good evening, Adrian.
Good evening, Kara. Thanks for taking my call, and good evening to your guests on tonight. Hey, I think to speak to the silence that's going on, first and foremost, I will go back to, we have a sense of selected outrage. We have selected outrage. See, those things that we pick and choose what we want to be outraged about. You know what I'm saying? So that's why this silence is so deafening right now. But I guarantee you, if they keep on moving this trial the way they are moving it, well, the trial ain't even started, but if they keep continue moving things the way they are moving it, somebody from within that crowd that was the loudest, they're going to start up again. You know what I'm saying? So we as a people, and we are too emotional as a people. Wherever your emotions are attached to, that's what's going to drive you. People have to learn how to detach their emotions from everything. We get moved and run, and we just hoop and holler about everything. You got to challenge your – what the Bible said, he that controls his spirit. You got to be able to control your spirit, man, because it says you're mightier than a man who rules the city. Or if I'm – I might quote it wrong. I'm not a style on scriptures, but I know what I'm hitting at. But people are out of control with their spirit, so that's why they're jumping on everything. I just sit back and observe. I do a lot of observations from things. Now, what we are really still dealing with, you all, that nobody touched on, the fact that white supremacy is still the biggest factor that drives everything in today's society. White, when I say, and I say racism, I say white supremacy. I'm a differentiate the two. White supremacy
is
in
the hot. I think we did touch on that subject.
Hold on,
You got some black people that's in that rotation now.
Carrie, can you get your gas, please?
Carrie, can you disagree?
Has to be called out, but at the end of the day,
sir,
we can call out all we want, but what the hell are we going to do about it?
Oh, my goodness.
So that's what they're daring us to do, and that's what
we have to continue fighting back.
So, I feel your pain and passion on it, but... No, nothing's been lost in the understanding tonight.
Sir. Am I just talking? Let me make my point. That's the problem with us. Let a person get their thought out before y'all start cutting people off. You don't even know where I was going with. You just interjected because your emotions got attached to something I was saying. Detach your emotions, brother. Detach your emotions. White supremacy is in the highest forms of society. Our legislation. Y'all talking about why things not changing just because white supremacy is there. When you think about law enforcement, it starts with the police association. The police association control the police department. Let's be real. It's white supremacy embedded there. When we think about our judicial system, white supremacy is embedded there. When I speak of racism, I think of racism. And acts of racism, those are these everyday people that you might encounter that we see these interactions with people and they're having these racial, they saying stuff, you know, using terms and whatever to try to get people riled up. Those people are the puppets. Those people are the puppets for white supremacy. One thing about law enforcement, the media plays a big factor in the media is corporate in this because every time something happens to law enforcement, I always have a narrative. And the media always leans toward the side of law enforcement. They always come out with a narrative. People have to convince society to think something happens to law enforcement.
Your phone is going in and out.
I don't get emotional about it. I'm sorry. You signed up for that. You know the possibility that comes with that job. You know what I'm saying? We have been, as people in society, we have been every time we have to allow us, we supposed to
be you're going in and out.
You said I'm going
in. You're going in and out. Your phone is breaking up. Can you hear me? Adrian, we can't hear you. Okay, we're not sure what happened to Adrian. We cannot hear you. I'm not sure. I think he's somewhere, maybe moving around. We can't hear you. I'm going to hope you can hear me. Yo, I had a strange thing happen this week, and I'm contemplating whether or not I should play these recordings or not. So since an attorney is on the line, I will ask his opinion. In April, I received a phone call, an anonymous call. The person said a whole bunch of things that didn't add up to anything. And they, you know, suggested that I take the information, which I couldn't understand, and take this information and put it on social media. But they never gave their name. They never gave a contact number. They never gave anything. That said, today I discovered who made the call. And the call came from someone in Judge Hagerman's office. So I have their voicemail, you know. So I don't know. Do I release the information or don't I? I can't, now everybody, listen, y'all, I don't think that interference is by accident now. Can you hear me, Leon Reed, because we can barely hear you. Y'all, do y'all hear that? I mean, basically, everything is fuzzy right now. So, obviously, we have stepped on some talk. Can you hear us, Attorney Reed?
I can hear you.
Okay. What did you say, Leah?
I can hear you.
Okay. So what are your thoughts? Because I hear like y'all are talking in a tunnel. Do y'all hear that static?
I mean, I hear you fine.
Okay, I hear you fine.
I mean, I mean, I guess after Adrian had his little emotional outburst, his phone gave out on him.
If you think the information is credible, you know, you are a journalist, but, you know, but also journalists ensure that they don't out the person who gave them information. So that's a decision that you would have to make as to whether or not.
The information led nowhere. I'll say that the information led nowhere. You know what? You are blessed tonight, whoever that was. I'm gonna pass on it. I'll put it out there tonight. Yeah, I'm gonna pass. I'll let you hear it, Leon, read it another time. But I'm gonna pass
okay.
on it. Yeah, I'm gonna pass on it. We're gonna go to Mr. James tonight, and he's gonna give us his feelings on what's going on. Good evening, Mr. James. How are you?
I'm not good at all. Good afternoon to all of you guys. How are you?
Good afternoon.
Good evening. Can you hear me pretty good?
Can you speak up a little louder?
Hold on a moment. Okay, can you hear me now?
That's better.
Okay, how am I doing? I'm not doing at all. On a lot of different areas. I'm disappointed in the process of this trial. It's very plain and evident to see that things are being done purposely, although they're under the guise of the proper conduct in a trial. You guys touched on the fact that it's gotten quiet in the city. I've noticed that as well, and it's disheartening and disappointing for me, because if you look at other situations such as this, the Breonna Taylor, the George Floyd, the Dante Wright, and all the rest of them, there's those citizens, those members of the city didn't let those families down. And I feel Fort Worth has let a Tatiana's family down.
Wow. So, what can make this right for you?
my life will never be the same. I mean, unlike anybody else in the city of Fort Worth, I have to view a Tatiana's house every day for the rest of my life. So this will never be over for me, trial or no trial. After all the dust is settled and all the news reports are over, every day I walk outside, I relive October 12th, 2019.
Wow. So what are your thoughts as to how do you think this is going to end? What are your thoughts?
Considering the manipulative aspects of this case, I can't really say. When you plainly see that things are being done under the guise of following the rules of law, you know, purposely manipulating the rules of law, it's problematic for me. When you try to sit back and let the legal system roll and it's being manipulated while you're sitting trying to be patient and understanding and you're seeing it be manipulated, it's problematic. When you listen to a change of venue and you ask yourself why, nothing's going on in the city of Fort Worth that would require a change of venue. In fact, it was stated that it will be held in Tarrant County, but there's a possibility that it won't. So that's double jargon. Either it is or it ain't.
Let's pause there. Let's put a pin there. He's got a point, Leon. The judge said that in one of those hearings, the venue would not change. And everybody thought that was final. And then they came back to only say that may not be the case. So how did that change after the judge had ruled on that?
It is my understanding that the change of venue was denied. The venue, the trial will be in Tarrant County. Now, if between now and the trial date, something out of pocket happens, they can certainly refile. But as long as everything stays the way it is, again, here's the thing. So at one point, Judge Hagerman, I don't want to say, he's cognizant of the need to move this trial forward, so he tried to push the issue to get the trial going. Now, as a defense attorney, you know, because you got two people talking, as attorney Leon Reed, you know, everybody hates defense lawyers until he's yours. And so,
amen to that.
And so, right now, when they had the hearing the other day on the schedule setting, and the judge said, hey, it'll be week after next before we hear the recusal. Well, the judge turned around and looked and said it and said, nah, we're going to do it on the 23rd next week. So they're aware of the need to get this stuff started and finished. Now, so when they have a scheduling order, so here's what's going to happen, and part of this happened the other day in trial. The judge asked the prosecutors and the judge asked the defense team, tell me all of the stuff that you have basically scheduled over the next several months. I got a capital murder trial in Johnson County. I got this going down here. All of this stuff has to be and can be verified. I have this at this trial. My expert witnesses have already indicated to me that they won't be available for this date and this date, but they can be available for these other. And so when the judge asked that of both sides, when they sit down to do that scheduling order, if the judge finds, you know, a 2 to 3 week window where, hey, y'all ain't got no settings here and they ain't got no settings there, you know, this is going to be when the stuff is, when that judge does that, it is what it is. When that scheduling order gets put in place, that is basically going to be the trial date. And so on the 23rd, now, the sad part, if all of their stuff is booked to November, then it will be November. You understand? But when it gets set, it's going to get set. And so I'm interested in what happens on the 23rd.
Because you said earlier it started November of last year, and now it looks like we may be November of this year. That's a full year.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Wow.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Also, remember, in the interim, when they've had their discovery hearings and these various if they came back with 150 boxes worth of stuff and it took them 2 months to get it, and I need 3 months to read it, that's how stuff can easily account for 5 months. You know, I can only read as fast as I can read, because in the interim, I have other cases, too, that other judges are going to be expecting me to come to. And I may have two, three, five trials in the meantime that I have to still prepare for. And I understand that a lot of people won't necessarily understand or like it, but that's the life of a defense attorney. You know, when you're trying to, you got a bunch of people and each one of them deserves, because they're your client, a particular amount of attention. I get the frustration. I get it, but I'm on the other side to where, what Chris Rock say, I don't condone it, but I understand kind of thing, I'm ready for it, and as soon as that's why I can only wait and see on the 23rd, they'll make a decision on who's still going to be the judge. That judge, whomever he or she is, has been ordered to make a scheduling order. And when they start they sit down and they do that scheduling order, once that judge puts that out, it just basically is what it is at that point.
So Mr. James, are you satisfied with that?
I'm satisfied with anybody having a fair trial, whether you're the defense or the prosecution. Fair is fair. If they're going to be fair, I got no problem with being fair. But when you blatantly see unfairness, that's problematic.
Right.
And I understand that, and I try to tell people, do you want it rushed or do you want it right? If at the end of the day, if that man gets convicted and the jury sentences him, to 30 years or whatever versus you rush it and something happens and some evidence gets overlooked or something, and the man walks away, well, then people will have said, I wish they'd have waited and got it right. I get it, and my heart goes out to you. I've talked to you in your front yard. My position has never changed. The city is, and the council members at that time, because my question has always been to the council members leading up to her death, your hands are not clean. Quit running out here, hollering, say her name, because on every one of those reports that was signed off on, you had the opportunity that when you saw this was happening, let's say in 2012, what did you do in 2013 to address it? If your answer is nothing, you're complicit. When you saw it happen again in 2013 and you did nothing in 2014 to address it, you are complicit. And nothing has been done. And if they'd have taken the steps, whether it was police department leadership, city council leadership, to address some of the systemic and cultural issues within the department, I believe in my heart that Sister Tatiana would still be alive today and in medical school. And so, there's blame to go around, but my heart goes out to you with and I hear it in your voice, and I've seen it in your eyes, how every day you walk out your front door, the first thing you see is her house. I get that. And it's hard that when I'm with her sisters, I feel their pain. Go ahead, sir.
Let me say this real quick. We've been at this for two years and 8 months, right? If that judge was any kind of biased, they should have asked for a recusal way before the week before trial.
Can you bring it
Well, remember, so when the trial got set in May is when the trial got set to June 23rd, around May 15th or so, and the defense attorneys filed a motion around May 27th or towards the end of May saying, hey, we went back and we looked and we got a lot of stuff going on. And on June the 3rd, some type of hearing was heard, and apparently the judge lost his temper, may have said or done some things that were the final, we'll say, domino in them filing the motion. So they may have been looking at filing a motion but didn't quite have enough to justify actually filing it. But whatever happened on June 3rd, it was enough for them. And here's the thing. And Carrie, the motions that they filed and the reasons and the basis, it's all public record. You go down tomorrow and get the motion and read exactly why they said they did what they did. And as a matter of fact, as of today, the district attorney's office filed a motion why they believe that he shouldn't be recused. You know, I haven't read it, but I saw that it has been filed. Okay. And so that's public record. Anybody can go say, give me that. You know, and you can read and see their reasoning. And so again, whatever happened on June 3rd, and that's where they were saying, you know, look, you tried to move out of order. That was against the local rules, and it was in contradiction to state law and in detriment to our client. You talk bad to us, and you treated us improperly. That makes us think you're not going to be fair to us when we go to trial, so we don't want you on the case anymore. And so, like I said, up until this time, the judge gave them their discovery request, all of the hearings, the days after day after day, the watching the videos. Like I said, the judge has a basis to say, I have not been biased in any way, shape, form, or fashion, and my actions speak louder than my words. Look at what I've done to make sure y'all get a fair trial. You understand what I'm saying? So I sympathize with you, sir. That's all I can say. I can't argue with you. I understand.
I don't want to argue. Last thing, I know Kerry got to go. I suggested to the city council. I suggested to the mayor. I suggested to the police chief. On the side of the police car, they have a slogan that says "Where the West Begins." I suggested they change that to "Where Trust Begins."
Wow.
It's gonna take some years before that comes.
Right.
I'm just saying. I mean, you know, when you begin something, I'm not saying it begins right then, but you gotta start somewhere.
True.
Y'all gotta get out of here. Go ahead.
Hey, I definitely enjoyed everything, and I'll talk to you later, Ms. James, and Leon. I'm gonna inbox you after the show.
Okay. I don't have an issue with that.
All right, well, hoorah to you, Sarge.
Simple fire. You know, but I thank you for inviting me, Carrie. I try to give just straightforward information. I'm a black man living in America like presumably everybody else that was on this call. And I have my own viewpoints and stuff of what I want to see downtown, but I always try to give solid information. So I thank you for inviting me and having enough thought process of me to make that invite.
Thank you. Y'all, listen, thank you to Attorney Leon Reed and Reggie Ruffin and Jeff Paul. Listen, all we can do now is wait. So we want to say pray for the family of Tatiana Jefferson. Pray for Mr. James, the neighbor. Pray for the city as a whole, because we don't know where this is going, but we know God ultimately is in control. And so we don't go fearing anything or any man, because we know, again, that God has it all under control. And if we're going to pray, why worry? So listen, y'all, we do this each and every Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. We ask you to tell a neighbor, tell a friend to check out the show. We ask you also to basically advertise here on the show. If you have a product, a service, if you have a business, a nonprofit, this is the place that we'd like to see you advertise that. Also, you can consider being a sponsor. If you like what we do each and every Friday night, consider being a sponsor. It takes work. It takes time. It takes effort. It takes material. It takes equipment to do what we do and to do it well. And so we ask you to consider sponsoring our show. And if you'd like to do that, reach out to me at letstalkfortworth@aol.com. That's letstalkfortworth@aol.com. Okay, y'all, until next Friday at the same time, good night.